It's the Duncan Trussell Family Hour, Episode 1. The Hurting Time. Please forgive the subpar sound on this episode. Duncan was moving and used the wrong microphones. God bless you, Whitney Houston. Rest in peace, you sweet water angel. Now enjoy The Hurting Time.
Hello, everybody. It's me, Duncan. Boy, do I have some weird news for all of you out there. This is going to really melt your brains, so I hope you're sitting down and not driving a vehicle or running. If you're jogging, you should sit down. If you're sitting down, you should slouch deeper into your chair. Close your blinds, pull out your pistols, cover yourself in some kind of caustic oil, and light a match, because this is it. The Lavender Hour is over. The winds of change have brought me and Natasha apart. We broke up. We're now living in separate places. It's over. It was inevitable. Well, I don't know if it was inevitable. I mean, change is always inevitable. Collapse is inevitable. The universe is always in a state of flux. And the more you attach yourself to any one situation, the more you can expect to suffer and feel pain. We're going to do one more Lavender Hour, though, this Sunday, and kind of talk about everything that happened, I guess. I don't know. It's certain to be thrilling and awkward and maybe a little sad, but hopefully really happy. Because, as we all know, flowers grow from the corpses of children. If you don't believe me, go to a child graveyard. Go to the corner of Hollywood Forever Cemetery and see the beautiful green grass growing up among the rotting, moldering SpongeBob SquarePants toys that desperately grieving parents left at the gravesides of their children. If you don't believe me, go and, I don't know, kill a kid and cover him with fertilizer and plant tomatoes over the body. I guarantee it'll grow delicious tomatoes. So here's what you might wonder. Okay, well, if the Lavender Hour is dead, you're probably asking yourself, what am I listening to right now? What is this? What am I hearing? What you're hearing is the very first of a series of podcasts that I'm going to be doing, a brand new podcast. I'm doing a solo project, which I haven't come up with a name yet. And right now I'm thinking about calling it the Duncan Trussell Family Hour. But I don't know if that's going to be it. I have a few other ideas or names. But that's the one that I'm most into right now. Kind of family-friendly podcast where we... not family-friendly, but family-friendly in the sense of like the Jim Jones-style family or something. I don't know. I don't know what it is. Family. I love families. We're all a family. We're a human family. That's the whole point. We're one family united atomically. We're all part of one great pulsating consciousness, which is Earth. Now, that being said, I'm going to continue to use the subscriber base that we built up with the Lavender Hour. So if you're someone who subscribed to us because you love the interaction between me and Natasha, or you like the gestalt, the third person that was created from our our conversations, then I bid you adieu. Farewell. I don't hold it against you to go wandering off into the electronic night and vanish into nothingness, and I hope that your body doesn't break out in boils, or your heart doesn't freeze up, or your family doesn't perish in some horrible accident because you made such a terrible and stupid decision to leave just because some change happened. You're weak, and I hope you die alone. But for those of you who decide to continue to listen and subscribe to us, to me, I guess I have to start saying me now, welcome. This podcast is going to be incredible. I've got some amazing people lined up to do this podcast. Coming soon, I've got Artosis, one of the most famous StarCraft players on the planet. I've been trying to contact some Los Angeles dominatrixes to interview them because I'm curious about that. I'm really curious about that. And there's going to be more. Geniuses, freaks, brilliantly funny people. will be joining me as I explore the fringes of society in my mind via my own personal solo podcast, coming to you from a house deep in the heart of Atwater Village, surrounded by Mexican families. Now, I love you all very much. I'm very excited about my first guest on this podcast. She's super, 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 super funny. She actually, I just performed in Chicago at the Chicago Theater with Joe Rogan and Joey Diaz, and she happened to be in Chicago, so Rogan let her perform, and she went up in front of 3,500 people, the most people I've ever performed for, the most people I think Diaz has ever performed for. Can't be sure. I'm not sure about that. I think the most people Rogan has ever performed, just a wall of people. She went in front of this wall of people and devastated, crushed the crowd, fell in love with her. They were throwing roses onto the stage, and afterwards, not joking, there was a line of people wanting autographs, and they wanted her autograph, and everyone fell in love with her. It was incredible. Everyone, please welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour, little Esther. Hello.
Hello. Well, thank you.
Well, thanks for doing this thing. I don't know what it is yet. So
we're sitting on the floor.
Yeah, we're sitting on the floor in my new office. It's a two-bedroom house that I got lucky enough to stumble into. And yeah, we're in my office, and there's a foff in here. There's some foff, which is the man stink, the smell of the man who lived here before with his dog.
I don't smell it, but I think that's just because I carry around that smell.
You think you have foff?
Yeah.
You don't have foff.
I kind of do.
You think you stink?
No. If there's such a thing as foff, I probably have it in my apartment.
Well, I don't want to seem sexist here, but I think foff can only come from a man. Foff is, I'll tell you what, I'm sure women have their own version of foff. I mean, I have no doubt women, must have some kind of specific bad smell associated with them, but men emit a mixture of testosterone. Like, the worst case is when, a guy decides to start working out in his apartment.
Oh, okay.
Have you ever smelled that? Have you ever smelled that?
No. Maybe that's what this is.
Yeah, it's like when a guy. It's a combination of a bunch of things. Loneliness has a smell.
It does.
It's the stink of loneliness and feet. That's what it is. It's where the smell. It's like whatever your body, whatever the sensory. Like when your body is like putting out the lonely pheromone.
Yeah.
And then you mix feet in with that, and then you throw in a fucking dog or something, and voila, foff emerges, and it's hard to get out. I don't know what I'm going to do to get it out of here.
Well, it'll go away. Just leave the windows open, and it's not in the main room.
It's just in here.
The carpet.
Yeah, it's the carpet.
Yeah.
All the tears that fell into the, he knows what happened. And,
Yeah, that's the scary thing about living in a place that someone else has lived, which is hard to not fall into that situation. But yeah, I always wonder who died in what room and whatever.
Right.
In my house that I grew up in, my grandparents both died in it.
Oof.
Yeah.
And do you believe in ghosts?
No, but I would like to.
Right, because then there's nothing to worry about, because then there's no death.
Right, exactly.
Because ghost means immortality.
If
ghosts exist, we're immortal beings.
Right, and it also means that, ghosts aren't bad, because if they were, we would know more about, they would have hurt us. I don't know.
They would have hurt us?
I feel like, if we knew about ghosts, they would be bad and they would be hurting us. But if there are
they'd
ghosts,
be at war with us.
Yeah, but if there are ghosts and we don't really know about them, then they're good. They're leaving us alone and not scary.
Oh, they're being polite.
Yeah.
Well, not everyone would say that. What about the Amityville Horror and the people who claim that they've been possessed by demons? People who live in a house and go insane, or people who become suicidal in a house and then you find out that the person who lived there before hung themselves or killed themselves.
I think that's just all your own stuff bringing that, or it's like a drug thing. I mean, I don't know. I've never done drugs, but I am assuming someone that's I was taken up by a demon. There's just so
You think it's drugs?
Yeah, I think there's just so many crazy people. But I would like to believe, let me make it clear, I would like to believe it's real, but I can't.
Well, yeah, you know, the problem, I'm not sure if I, the reason I think I do believe in ghosts is because every single religion and indigenous culture has a belief in this idea that there's a spiritual realm that exists outside our perceptual mechanisms, and you can only see it if you like meditate a lot, or if you do take drugs shamanically, then suddenly you can tune into this other place. Like shamans, once you get to a certain level of learning to be a shaman, you apparently put yourself in some kind of danger because other shamans can like curse you and hit you with like what's called like spirit darts. They have this idea of like, they're always very strange, and it seems so silly and superstitious until you think about how potent the mind is, you know, how like the mind can be so easily manipulated, how someone like a doctor, imagine if you go to a doctor tomorrow and the doctor says to you, I'm sorry, but you have pancreatic cancer. What do you do? What would happen? What would you do then?
Right. Well, that's like the most death sentence of all cancers.
Yeah.
But yeah, you would just, I would be like, oh my God, I have it. I have to believe I have it because a doctor told me.
And your behavior would change.
Yeah.
You'd get sad and depressed. Your emotion, you'd start going through the stages of grief. Your emotions would break down. You'd have to call everyone, and everyone around you would be depressed and fucked up. And it all based on belief, you know. Now, even if you didn't have pancreatic cancer, emotionally, you'd be devastated.
Right. I don't know that I'd call people, but I would, I don't know.
You wouldn't call anybody.
I don't think I would keep it secret if I was really sick.
You wouldn't even call your parents?
I would tell my parents, but I wouldn't tell like other, you know?
You wouldn't tell your friends?
I don't think so. Maybe like two close friends.
Don't you kind of think you have to tell your friends so that, to give them the chance to say goodbye to you?
I don't know. I don't like goodbyes, so that would like make me weird. And that everyone would think about it. Everyone would treat you really differently, and then your last like 6 months would be like weird.
Isn't that fucked up that the like people, when you say treat you differently, they would treat you like they weren't taking you for granted.
Yeah, like they know you're going, so they would be really good to you, and like also feel sorry for you, and that would
part would suck.
Yeah,
the whole drama of death.
Yeah,
is annoying.
Yeah.
When people die, they get really dramatic. They do.
And that's what I don't want to do. I don't want that to happen.
It amplifies their everything. Death is an amplifier. So when people are dying, all the parts of their personality that, what for better or for worse, get amplified. Have you ever heard the term, you die like you lived?
Yeah.
So, like, if you're a reclusive person, then you'll probably retreat back into, like, you'll go, maybe not tell people and just die alone,
yeah,
you know?
In my bed watching Back to the Future.
That's a great thing to watch while you're dying.
Yeah.
Oh, what a great, oh my God, on Reddit, there was this thing about Back to the Future, which was so depressing, which is that Back to the Future, he went back to the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
If you went back that same span of time now, like if Back to the Future got released now, you'd go back to like 81.
Oh, wow.
How fucked up is that? That's crazy. But then actually, you're very young. So what?
Yeah.
You're young.
I was born in 88.
God, Jesus, that's weird. God, I'm so old. 88.
I know how you feel, because I meet people that say they're born in like 92, and it makes me feel weird.
92?
Yeah, that makes me feel really weird.
88. I'm trying to think of what I was doing at 88. God, I was like blah. Probably, let me think. 88. 88. 6. Oh, yeah. That was probably right when I started. That's probably right around when I figured out how to masturbate, I guess.
Such a great point.
Yeah.
Reference.
Yeah, 88. Oh, those are the... Well, I mean, because you have to, like, when you're a kid... Because that's the thing. I didn't... My mom was a psychologist, so way before I had hit puberty, she was, like, already telling me about, like, what an orgasm was and masturbation.
Oh my
and
God,
stuff.
Really?
So I didn't know what it was, so I was, like, always, like, I can remember, like, reading about this. The idea being, there's, like, a pop psychology idea, and maybe it's gone now, but there's this idea where you don't want, like, sex to seem taboo or weird at all, and if you make it seem weird, then the kid will, like, have, like, fucked up problems. For the, like, a lot of people... whose parents kind of like kept it away from them, they're the ones who end up like, you know, punching fucking homeless people at night, or like creeping into houses and wearing people's lingerie and stuff.
That's very true. For me, like, my parents were always really open about it too. Like, when I was in, I think, high school, or I don't know, junior high, they were like, okay, we want to tell you, like, it's okay if you do it, just tell us. Like, it was...
It's okay if you masturbate?
No, have sex.
It's okay if you have sex, just tell us.
Yeah, or, like, just be safe about it.
God, I wonder if I had a kid, if I'd say, tell me.
And in fact, after I did, when I was 15, I had sex with my high school boyfriend, and, like, the next day I told my parents.
What did they say?
They were like, oh, okay, just be safe.
I brought this disgusting girl home once, and then the next day I came up to my room and there was a box of condoms on the desk.
Oh my God.
That my mom had seen the girl and been like, that is not gonna have a baby with you. You can't do that, man. Yeah, I don't know what I mean. That's a strange situation you get in with kids, having to talk about that shit.
I think it's, yeah, I guess it is, but you know there's going to be a point where they already know about it and you haven't talked about it, you know? Like, I was wondering about sex, like everyone, you know, like really young. And so you already know what it is. So then it's like, by the time my parents talked about it with me, it was like, okay, yeah, I know, you know, here we are coming together, agreeing that we all know and it's okay.
So disappointing the first time you have sex. So disappointing. Was it disappointing for you? Did you like it?
It was after a Britney Spears concert.
Wow.
And
so romantic.
Yeah, it was. And
so wait, this guy you were dating went with you to a Britney Spears concert?
No, I actually just got home from it and then he came over.
Oh, okay. I see.
And we were dating for like 2 months, and it was a guy in high school that I had a crush on for like 2 years, and then I started dating him. So I was like, I knew I was going to have sex with him, and I was like, well, I don't know if I'm ready to do it now, but I guess if it's going to hurt the first time, we'll just have, like, the hurting time over with right now.
Yeah.
And then, like, he...
The hurting time. That's a great book. You should write a book, a kid's book, like some book for girls about sex called The Hurting Time. The Hurting Time. And make it like it show your night, like at the Britney Spears concert, at the concession stand, and how you knew the hurting time was coming.
And then, like, so he, like, I was like, well, I don't have any, we were like, we don't have any condoms. He's like, I'll go get some. And then I was like, oh, wait, I actually do have one that I had as a joke, because that's what you do when you're 15.
Right.
And so, yeah, then he, like, put it in, and it didn't hurt. And he was like, should I stop? And I was like, I guess so. But then, like, he didn't, and so we just had sex. It's not like I had an orgasm or anything. I didn't have orgasms until I was, like, 17. And this was when I was 15, so.
Yeah, I can remember mine.
How'd that go?
I just left a Britney Spears concert, and I was raped by an Armenian cab driver on the way home. No, I don't remember exactly what precipitated it. It was like the girl I knew. I know the girl was a senior in high school, and I was a freshman.
Mm.
So there was something. No, it was, I know it seems like a but it was like not an, it was like
to
me, I don't know. I mean, I don't want, I don't know. I think at the time, I don't know.
My dad told me that the girl he lost his virginity to, her nickname was the Blob. Was it like that kind of thing or no?
I met your dad.
Yeah.
He's fucking cool, man. Your dad is cool. He seems really smart. I really like him. The Blob, a lot. Come in here. How did he tell you that story? I want to tell you about my night with the Blob.
No, we were at dinner and it just came up. Like my mom was making fun of him and he was like, yeah, well, I had sex with the Blob at camp or something. I don't know.
Oh, the Blob. Well, you know, you wonder when you're young. And there's this, I think less so for a girl, but for a guy, there's fucking heavy pressure.
Yeah.
To not be a virgin anymore. Like, you need to fuck or everyone thinks something's wrong with you.
Right, that's kind of sad.
Yes, that is sad.
That makes me sad.
Well, it's an initiatory thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's sad, but everything about high school is sad. Most everything about high school is just depressing. If you think about it, you're in this fucking, it's essentially a prison for teenagers. High school is a prison for teenagers.
It was fun for me because I did theater and dance and stuff, so I didn't look at it like that, but...
I mean, it was fun. It was fun for me because I had easy access to LSD, because I was during the LSD boom, so it was like some LSD was a million times more obtainable when I was in high school than now. In those days, man, you could just... it would fall out of your... You'd just fall out of people's hair. It was everywhere.
Wow.
Everywhere. Flooded. The high schools were flooded with acid. You're always blasted on LSD. Good LSD, too. Crazy. Pure. Beautiful. Wonderful. Just God channeling LSD. But at the time, when you're in high school, you have no, like... No maps.
Yeah.
Nothing to like say. Like when you're hallucinating in high school, you can't see like a vision of some kind of hieroglyph, or you can't see a, like have some moment where some, I don't know, Joseph Campbell style archetypical symbol is blasting into your head and be like, oh my God, I'm looking at my anima and animus and they're, in the way that they're merged together and it's imbalanced because my dad was an alcoholic. You just, they're like, man, look at that circle with the lights inside it. But you, because we didn't have, you know, experience. But anyway.
I can't believe that you were doing LSD in high school. That's so
I
crazy.
Took LSD before I drank.
Wow. I remember being a senior and finding out that some of my girlfriends were doing coke. And I was like, what? Really? In high school? Like, it was...
Coke in high school is worse than acid.
Oh, okay.
Now that's fucked up. Yes.
I feel like coke is like a thing that's like okay. And then like LSD is like, whoa, that's like a new level of crazy.
Well, here's the difference. Cocaine falls into like the category of drugs that... Cocaine is idiot powder is what it is. It's it does nothing for you. You do blow and it makes you you know,
makes you feel sexy. That's
I guess so. It makes you feel like what it, the chemicals it's stimulating in your brain are apparently is dopamine.
Mm-hmm.
Correct me out there if I'm wrong about this. It's dopamine. So dopamine is the chemical that your brain releases to compel you to do things that are healthy for you. So like if you go running, your brain will release some dopamine. If you finish if you get off stage and you've had a good set and that feeling of like, wow, this is amazing. That's some combination of dopamine and serotonin. So when you do coke, it creates that exact same release in your brain, and you've done nothing except snorted powder.
Oh wow!
So suddenly you're like your brain is telling you, congratulations, you did it, you did it, you've done it.
So sad.
Yeah,
that's what it is. Like now that I think about all the people who think they're cool to do it, it's like, oh, you just want to feel good about yourself after doing nothing.
You're short wire. It's like when you hotwire a car or something to get it going. It's like you're doing that with your brain instead of like actually working or doing something important. And that's why cokeheads are so fucking pathetic, because they have this entrepreneurial feel to them.
Like
they're doing something special. They all act like they're really up to some great thing, and it's like, what are you doing, you're doing nothing. What the fuck are you doing? You're like, you have beer cans all over the house and you're like fidgety. There's nothing you're doing interesting. LSD, on the other hand.
Let's hear this.
My dear little Esther, LSD. Those are teardrops of Jesus. LSD causes you to like feel everything. You open up to the universe and you suddenly become, deeply connected to the what's really happening. When you take acid, good LSD, one common thing that people will say that they see is this sort of breathing effect. So the walls will kind of be breathing, and there's this rhythm that's happening as the universe around you is kind of ebbing and flowing, which is really what's happening, but you can't see it because you're stuck in time. If you were to see things you know, at a super fast rate, then the universe would look like more like, you know, if you could see, for example, if you could see, you know, I don't know, stone, and you could see rock, but you could see it from the perspective of a million years a second or something like that, it would appear to be moving. The wind would be shaping and it'd be moving. So everything's always changing and turning and breathing. And so you kind of start seeing stuff like that. It opens your third eye to...
I feel like I've seen that in an episode of The Simpsons.
The breathing effect?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure. It's been duplicated. I mean, movies are always attempting to duplicate it. Like, if you watch, I don't know if you've ever seen Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
No, I don't know.
They did a pretty good job of replicating the LSD effect. Mm-hmm. And then if you take enough of it, then you become kind of part of that breathing. And then if you take in more than that, then you just dissipate into nothingness and you're just gone. You sort of experience this incredible kaleidoscopic oneness where you just, your personality shatters and you become like just part of time and space. And that's a very great place to be. That's a good place for anyone to be if you take it with the right people.
Do you take it and then like lay down, or do you take it and then like run around a field?
When I was a kid, I'd take it and go to shopping malls and watch people. We'd like sit in shopping malls and watch people shopping and like just freak out over how stupid the whole thing was. It's amazing. It gives you like this, it has a deprogramming effect. So you kind of, all of a sudden every activity that used to seem kind of normal to you and habitual begins to seem suspect and ridiculous and absurd.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Like buying clothes, wearing clothes, using money, the idea of having a job, the notion, everything that you've kind of been programmed,
you question it. It sounds like you just want to be basic and simple and
that's
caveman.
It.
Caveman.
That's it. Yeah, it brings you back to like a more of like an aboriginal place or something where the whole thing seems everything. It's like everyone's gone insane. Everyone seems crazy. And that's the funny thing when people say, you know, if you take LSD more than twice, you'll go legally insane. But really what happens is if you take it enough times, you realize society has gone mad. You know, because you don't have the comfortable. I mean, what's more comforting than, I think about this all the time. What's more comfort? If you could wake up in the morning and really believe that you lived in the best country in the world and that the American flag was beautiful and only represented freedom and truth, and that Jesus Christ was your Lord and Savior and held a place in your heart, and that waiting for you at the pearly gates upon your expiration was your entire family waiting to embrace and hold you and love you. And yet it's totally okay to go to war because it has to happen. And the people who go to war are always heroes, and the wars we fight are always right. And what's better than having a wife and some kids and a beautiful house? That's what life's all about. If you could really wake up in the morning and believe that stuff, wow, you're in fucking paradise.
Really?
Sure. Think how comfortable. It's like living a dream. It's like, you know, it's like if you could go in to Disneyland and really believe it was a magic kingdom and the fucking Mickey Mouse was really Mickey Mouse, it'd be the greatest place. It would be the most incredible place ever.
It sounds, have you heard of Celebration Florida?
No, what's that?
You don't know what that is?
Nope.
Oh my God. It's like, okay, it's a town in Florida that I don't know if it's owned by Disney, but it's like right near Disney World, and it's got like a Disney affiliation in some way. And it's a town that you have to, it's like, have you seen the movie Pleasantville?
Yes.
It's like that's like the best way to explain it. You have to apply to get in, and I'm pretty sure like there's like no black people allowed, and it's and like,
can they do that?
I think it's like there's like maybe like one black family. Like it's hard, like you have to really be like white to get in. And if you drive around it just looks like a Pleasantville town. Like it looks like a little like a fake town, but it's not. It's a real town, and they have everything. It's like self-sustaining. They have everything they need in that little area.
Whoa.
Yeah, and like the application process is like a big deal, and it's really expensive, and it's weird.
That is amazing. I've never heard of that.
Oh my God.
I'm applying.
Yeah. It's like what you just explained, basically. I'm sure they like have their flags and, you know.
Right. They let themselves believe a lie.
Yeah. If you walked in there, that's like, you would feel that.
Wow. Man, that's cool. Well, that's so spooky. Well, I mean, but then on the other hand, what's the alternative? I mean, it's like, do you want to spend your life living a comfortable lie, or do you want to spend your life feeling like you're surrounded by lunatics in a country that's basically fueled by death and war?
Right. Yeah, that's, well, for me, I like, it sounds similar. Like, I always feel like people who, because I don't believe in God. I don't know, do you? You don't
believe in God?
Yeah,
I don't believe in the conceptualization that a lot of fundamentalists have of God. I don't have, but I definitely believe in a hierarchy of intelligence in the universe. I don't think life is limited to just right. this planet.
Right, of course.
So if life's not limited to this planet and there's other life, then there must be a hierarchy of intelligence. And I think if the universe is infinite, then that hierarchy of intelligence must be infinite. And so at some point on that scale of infinite intelligence and exponential increase in awareness, mm-hmm. that's where you start hitting what I would consider to be the realm of the gods, or the realm of like a place where some all-powerful omnipotent force is completely aware of what we're doing. Because if you're it just depends if you define intelligence by levels of awareness, which I would, mm-hmm. you know, and autonomy, then, and if there's beings in other parts of the universe and it goes on forever, then there must be some supreme point of ultimate intelligence and supreme autonomy, and that would be God, I guess.
Yeah, I guess.
So that's why I believe in God. And I also, if that being has like ultimate awareness, then that means that that being has some connection to us in some way or another, or is aware that we're all part of, that all the planets and quasars and black holes and everything, it's all part of that, and kind of is aware that it's happening. Or maybe it's just in a field of awareness. So yes, I believe in God in that way, but I don't believe in like,
right, but
I hate gays, let's make hell.
Right. Well, that's interesting. I'm trying to like categorize your belief, and I can't, but like, the reason I bring it up is just, like, it seems to me like what you're saying, if you believe in Jesus and the American flag and all this shit, you are better off in terms of how you live your life, right? Because you're just happy and taken care of.
Well, yeah, it's kind of like, you're happy, you're comfortable. I mean, I don't know if have you ever read Watership Down?
No, what's that? What?
Oh, it's great. It's a great book about rabbits. It's a beautiful book about talking rabbits. You never read Watership Down?
No.
Wonderful book. It's about these rabbits that, the whole thing's an incredible metaphor, but it's about these rabbits that kind of have to leave their warren, because one of them has this premonition that something horrible is going to happen, and they try to find, they're kind of led by this like prophetic, mystical rabbit that thinks it knows of a safe place for them to live. And so on the way there, they kind of run across all these different rabbits and have all these different like weird things to happen to them. And they find a warren of rabbits where all the rabbits are really fat and comfortable, but there's something weird about it, and they don't understand what it is. They can't, they get this like, they sense that something's off with these rabbits. And basically what it is these rabbits are kind of like being harvested by a hunter who like throws lettuce out to keep them well fed, and every once in a while eats, you know, a few of them. But they all just live in this delusion where they pretend that's not happening and act like they're living in paradise, when really they're just, you know, sacrificing themselves towards the carnivorous appetite to this farmer. So that's kind of like when you live in the United States and you're aware of the millions of the hundreds of thousands of people who died in Iraq, and the countless people who died in Afghanistan, and all the different people that get killed every single day by the American war machine. And even though you're having a good life, you still, in the back of your mind, you still have to come to terms with the fact that the country you're living in and the taxes you're paying are to some degree going to blow up children over, you know, that maybe don't necessarily need to get blown up. So it's like that, you know, it's like
children that don't need to get blown up.
Some kids might need to get blown up. I don't know. There might be a few. I've seen some fucking teenagers that could use a cluster bomb to the fucking head.
Unfortunately, they're all in our country.
Yeah. Yeah. No shit, man. Yeah. So, you know, you live here and you've kind of got to like abide by that. You know, you can't. I mean, what are you going to do?
That rabbits thing is really sticking with me.
You'd love it. You'd love the whole book. It's an incredible book. Oh, Watership Down. It's great. I think there's a cartoon you can watch too.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, if you don't feel like reading the book. Yeah, man, it's a very perplexing situation. And you know what? But though, in almost every form of interaction, there's a certain bit of self-delusion that has to happen to be able to communicate and to function in society, right?
Self-delusion, yeah.
You know, like friends, like you might have friends that kind of suck, you know, and you've kind of got to like, you know, or there's certain, what I mean is like sometimes with people, you might have to ignore certain aspects of their personality to really like connect with them. which is okay. No one's perfect, but you know what I mean? There's all the worst though is when you get around somebody who's like trying to get force you to play a game that you don't want to play,
right?
They're trying to make, like, force a response from you. That's
I actually one of my best friends, like from high school and college, and you know, he was a compulsive liar. Like, this, he's a friend of mine, like, not in a relationship or anything, but and I just, like, everyone around us knew he was a compulsive liar, and I always just, like, I was aware of it, and I just kind of accepted it. And I was like, okay, I can kind of tell when he's lying and when he's not, so I'm just, he's fun, so let's hang out.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
That's great. See, that's a very advanced way to be, I think, because that's not really, like, you're not deluding yourself. You're just, you've come to terms with a problem.
Yeah.
You're just letting him be himself, and you're not, like, trying to trick yourself into thinking that everything's okay.
Yeah, no, and we liked all the same stuff, so we, like, listen, you know, we just, like, got to hang out and do stuff. And I think it's because he's gay, and so, like, that's, like, I don't know. He was, like, in the closet about it, too, and that was, like, affected him into being a liar.
Give me an example of some of his lies.
Oh, God. Like, just stuff, it's really bad. Like, he was an actor, and he told all of our friends that he was cast as Robin in The Dark Knight. And then, like, wow. A few weeks, like, and it was, like, legitimate, like, oh my God, like, he's gonna drop out of school and this is gonna be a real thing. Wow. And everyone was just, like, couldn't believe it. His parents were so excited. And then, like, a couple weeks later, it was like, I got the call, my part was cut out. Like, really serious, like, real big lies. Like, and that's just, like, one of, like, many.
So he's an ambitious liar.
Yeah, yeah. But, like, I just always was like, I love this guy. We like going to Lady Gaga concerts and stuff like that. So I'm just gonna, you know, deal with his lies.
What happened to him? Did he lie himself to death?
No, he lied himself into a career.
What does he do?
He works in the entertainment industry, but not.
That's awesome. Good for him.
Not on the creative side.
Man, that must be fun to be able to. I have the hardest time lying. I just can't do it. I feel so gross with, like, even the smallest lies.
Yeah.
I feel, like, diseased for days. If I did the smallest thing, you're just like, oh, why did I do that? Why am I such a coward? Why couldn't I just tell the truth? I don't know. But maybe it's, you know, that's the thing. You run into this silly thing. It's like you have to analyze your morality and your ethics and consider, like, where does it come from? Where have I learned right from wrong? Why am I making these decisions if it's, you know, if I haven't connected with some underlying truth to reality, then what am I basing my decisions on? You know, what's my system of morality? Is it based on anything real? Does lying matter if we're all just, like, waveforms in some ever-changing cosmic soup? Does it matter if I fucking tell somebody that my car broke down when I don't want to go to their dumb party?
Right. It kind of doesn't, I guess.
Or does it?
I think we decide what matters to us. That's it. Right?
Right. You decide what matters to you.
So, like, you... Because I realized that, too. Like, I went through a thing recently where, like... like, I kind of had to, like, cover something up in a situation, and...
You can't talk about it?
No.
Okay, so you had to cover something up.
And I, like, for someone, I was covering something up for them, and it was, like, okay, I had to have someone else say to me, what you're doing is okay, for me to, like, be okay with it.
Right, confession.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm the kind of person, like, I listen to what people tell me, like, I'm kind of, like... I don't know if I'm, like, seeking, like, a leader or something, but that's what I've been told. It's, like, I want to be told what to do. And so, like, once I had one of my friends tell me, like, it's okay, just, you know, just say this one thing and then whatever. Because it didn't even have anything to do with me. I was, like, helping someone else. And once he told me it was okay, I was, like, okay.
Right.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, that's a funny effect that can happen. When sometimes my therapist, I'll make a confession, my therapist will be like, that's fine. You're okay. Yeah, I give you permission to do that, or that's okay. Or mm-hmm. And just somehow that creates this relief where you're like, oh, okay, I'm not a monster, I guess. I'm not a demon. But still, you know, to go back to what you said before that, that we decide mm-hmm. what we believe. We decide what's right. You know, we decide, we make the decision about what's good and what's bad, or what we are and what we aren't. That, you see, that's a very difficult place when that's the root of existentialism. And if you really begin to study the implications of that notion, then you will come to a place of despair, which is because you're kind of like, if you're always forced to be creating yourself and you're always in the act of creating yourself, mm-hmm. then that means that at your core, you're nothing.
Yeah.
You're just a being that's creating itself. And if you're just a being that's creating itself, then it makes anything that you do absurd, because you're this, you know, you're just this essentially like a something that's kind of pretending and parading around to be a thing, when underneath it is just this blank nullification, nothingness, just an empty nothingness that's expressing itself in the form of action that's all based on, you know, belief systems that were inherited and have their roots in superstition. You know, if you trace it all back, we all have descended from people who believed in Christianity. We've all descended mm-hmm. from people who believed in some wildly religious, and now everything that's all being proved and dispelled. It's all being shown to be false and wrong and insanity, or maniacs out in the desert who had like bad water and were hallucinating. And so then all of a sudden you're stuck into this. You come into this place of absurdity, and then you go into a place of despair. If you believe that you're nothing, or if you believe that you're the one really making things up, or ultimately that there's no essential and innate truth. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. And actually, as you explain that, I could really only kind of apply it to stand up, as you were saying, like if you're just creating stuff and then you're like, your canvas is blank. I think that's what you said. Like, that's because I used to like be very accepting of people's help for my stand up. And like, I would like, if someone had tags or like whatever to help me with it, I would take it in. And then I would be like, oh, what they said is better than what I said. And then it's like, I kind of felt like, oh, I'm fake, and like, I'm just accepting help. And then like, I came to this point where I'm like, no, I need to be like my own renewable resource of information. Yeah. And it's just going to be me from now on.
That's great. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, because then, yeah, exactly. That's really good. That, I mean, I think that's the, once you get into the sticky situation of like, in not just in stand up, of course, but in almost mm-hmm. anything, if you're letting yeah. people like kind of tell you what you are,
yeah.
then it's even one step removed for, it's like double absurdity, because now someone who is nothing, who's telling themselves what they are, is telling you what you
yeah,
are. So now you got a real fucking weird echo happening. It's like, who the fuck are you to tell me what I'm supposed to be doing? Look at you.
Yeah, that's not fair.
It's not fair. We get blasted from the womb to the tomb. We're like rockets flying into the grave. And like, in the midst, you figured something out in the midst of this insanity. By the way, I think it is possible to have a connection with real truth, though. That's the thing. I had a Emil who actually has been on the Lavender Hour a few times. We used to get in fights when I was in college because you run into this other, here's another problem. So let's imagine that we're nothingness making itself something, right? That's one problem. But let's look at the other problem. Let's imagine there's some essential innate truth in the universe. Let's imagine that there's some real ground, like a basis of a thing that you can, everything grows from, some basic truth that everything grows from, which is, for, you know, religious people, is God.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then it's like, all right, well, then if there's some essential truth, where's freedom? You know, if there's some essential truth and things, you know, come from some basic core principle, and then there's right and there's wrong and there's good and there's evil, and you're falling on one side of the scale or another, then what are you? Then you get into this idea of predeterminism and predestination, and suddenly like all your activity is already kind of, there's no real freedom. Everything you're doing is just originating from this equation that's already been worked out.
Right.
So then you get wound up in another kind of fucking trap. You know, one side, your nothingness, absurdity, everything you do is ridiculous. On the other side of it, everything you do is already kind of some echo of an original creator.
Yeah, it's planned out, and there's no real room for coolness.
And any coolness you think is happening is just like you're
part
just
of the plan.
Part of the plan. Yeah, exactly. So then what are you? Now you're just some kind of fucking puppet. You know, now you're just some weird marionette being controlled by some series of events that are going on into infinity. And so now you're fucked, you know?
Can I tell you, this is why I don't think about this stuff. It makes me mad.
It makes you mad?
Yeah.
So this is what we're talking about, though. Exactly. It's like, so what do? Do you spend your time allowing your mind to, like, focus on these things and get pissed and weirded out and start feeling this sense of the thing you're feeling right now? Sartre called it nausea. It's nausea is the word for it. It's this sense of, like, ugh. God, fuck, I don't even, this is a terrible feeling. Do you allow yourself to live in that place and you're real, or do you allow yourself to live in a kind of lie where you get to parade around and pretend that you're doing something? But ultimately it's like, you know, underneath it all, you know the truth.
Right.
There's a third option here, by the way. This doesn't have to end in us like hanging ourselves at the end of this podcast.
I don't know. I've had people say, like, I've heard people say, like, I wish I was an animal and my life was just that simple and I was just eating. And then I was like, oh, no, I don't know. Like, I just like the comfort I have and, like, my material possessions, just, like, a bed and, like, an apartment. And I don't know. I like to not think about stuff and just kind of go other places. It's like, at what point are you too smart for your own good?
Well, I mean, you fucking, when you're making mail bombs, I guess, like to Kaczynski, you know, when you've like kind of like gotten so nuts from considering this shit that you're like, but no, see, I think there's a, you know, you first of all, what you're trying to avoid, you can't avoid. You're on a collision course with it. There's absolutely no way that you are going to continue to be friends with me and the friends that you're friends with and avoid taking a potent psychedelic.
No,
you might as well provoke it. Okay, maybe not. But aside from that the collision course is, you know, that you're faced with is is your body's going to start breaking down as you get older, and you're going to be forced to face your own mortality and these kinds of things eventually. So I think it's better to do it now with a fresh mind and really start breaking it all down so that you can actualize yourself. That's the awesome thing about this is that there's a third option here. There's a third fucking option. It doesn't have to be one or the other. There's a third option.
Tell me what it is.
Chaos. 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 You begin to realize that there can be novelty in the universe. You begin to realize that your little human fucking mind and all its pathetic attempts to try to decode and decrypt and reverse engineer the universe so that you can understand things is just a whimpering, silly attempt to try to gain control over something that you have no control over. So now you get to the third option. The third option, surrender. That's the third option. When you've analyzed this, suddenly you realize, wait a minute, I'm just going to let go. Mm-hmm. Instead of trying to hide or conceal this stuff, you try to understand it as much as you can and then just let go into it. Like, I don't know if it's absurd and I don't know if it's all predestined, but in this moment, I'm just going to let myself be part of this flow of matter and consciousness that has taken the form of myself, you know, my identity. I'm just going to let myself be this thing. I'm not going to worry about good or evil or right or wrong or predeterminism or absurdity. I'm just going to be in this one beautiful moment in time and be part of the flow and allow myself to be that. That's freedom. If you can hit that place, fuck, you're doing great. You're ice skating on infinity. You're like, that's when you can start doing backflips in life and stuff, you know? That's when you can really start living if you can hit that place.
It sounds like that person, though, is the kind of person that is kind of living their life like an animal.
Well, here's the difference. An animal, here's the difference. Animals are engaged in four basic activities: eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. This is all that an animal's concerned with. Animals don't spend any time thinking about philosophy or God or anything like that. So the reason you're not like an animal is because animals aren't free. You know, animals are trapped by their instincts and they seem to be mostly slaves to impulse. You know, like when you're around a dog, just clap your hands and watch what happens. You can keep clapping your hands around a dog and it'll always look. It'll just keep looking and looking. It's totally a slave to its instincts. Whereas I think a person who's actualized is the opposite of being a slave to their instincts. They've kind of like become a, almost like a, they've become like this pure expression of the universe. They've like, you know, the best way I put it is I heard this description of Sri Ramana Maharishi, who's this famous fucking saint from India, and he was described as a corpse that the universe spoke through. And I always thought that was he had died. His personality had died, but like time and space was just sort of like communicating through him. That's fucking cool. But to get to that death state, you don't get there from deluding yourself. You get there from going insane, you know, from like confusing and deconstructing your ego to the point where you break free, I think, of the normal, you know, the normal things that everyone's chained down to by, chained down by, into. There we go. I don't know. Look, ultimately, I don't know. I'm fucking confused. I'm more an animal than anything else. I'm certainly not this weird actualized fantasy person that I just made up. I don't know. I only know a few people like that. You know, most people I know are just animals.
Yeah. I'm like, so I like to be so unaware of this kind of stuff that like, I like to pretend that if I cut into my arm, it would be like what happens if when you cut into a Barbie. Like, it would just be all the same.
Like, you're plastic?
Yeah.
You like to pretend that you don't have bones?
Yeah, like, because when I really think about, like, a skeleton inside of me and blood, yeah. I'm like, and, like, then the intestines, too, and muscles, I'm like, oh, my God, no. Get away from me. I don't like it.
You're afraid of death?
I don't think that that's, maybe it is, but I just don't, I don't relate that to this. Like, I think it's just, like, I don't, like, thinking about the gross body stuff that's there that I don't ever have to deal with. This sounds really immature.
No, it doesn't. No, I'm telling you, many people I know are like spend their lives trying to avoid this shit. And if you mention it to them, they like, they're horrified. They like, there's something about like thinking. Well, I think it's a fear of death. I think it's a fear of death. I think it's denying your own mortality, denying the...
Yeah, you're right, yeah.
What's really going down here, because the more you can do that, you can kind of... It's if you look at the tarot, you know, do you know about the tarot cards, the major arcana of the tarot cards? Have you ever checked out tarot cards before?
I just know what tarot cards are, but I don't know what...
So it's like, you know, the major arcana represents a progression, the spiritual evolution of a person through life. And so the first card in the major arcana is the Fool. And that card represents the idea of going through life when you're going down the spiritual path, you start off as the Fool. Mm-hmm. And the Fool, as I recall, is staring up at the sky and there's a dog at his feet and he's like about to walk off a cliff, I think. He's like about to walk off the edge of a cliff because he's not looking around where he really is, mm-hmm. right? And so then the final card in the major arcana is, and if I'm mispronouncing this stuff, I'm sure you'll let me know, but the final card is the Hermit. It's that same fucking cliff, but an old man holding a lantern over the cliff, you know? And so this represents like the sort of, and through and down, you know, as this Fool progresses through the journey, you know, there's all these changes that happen as you grow. But the first place you start out as is this place of like, I don't want to think about these things. I just want to keep going down the path with my eyes closed and,
like the fat little rabbits.
But you got that fucking dog. Yeah, with the fat little rabbits. Well, I'll tell you, here's the problem. You got that dog nipping at your heels. And that dog is truth. The dog is the deeper part of yourself that's like, you know, like trying to wake you up to the fact that, listen, yeah, you can live on the surface level. You can be a fucking Barbie doll all you want. You can like live in that place. And by the way, good luck. Stay there if you can. Stay there for as long as you can. Why? As long as the bathtub water's hot, why get out?
Right.
You know? Why jump out into the icy cold? Why jump into the icy cold of infinity when you can like sit in a fucking bathtub and think you're plastic? And I get it. I mean, that's okay.
I mean, I can't really think that, and I don't really think that. I just want to pretend that I can.
I know. You see, you're really smart, and so on. You know that it's just a temporary kind of thing that's going to eventually collapse in on itself, and that's when you'll have your first nervous breakdown. That's when you. But they're great. Nervous breakdowns are great. You know, we need to have those.
I don't know if I've ever had one. Would I know?
If you'd had a breakdown?
A nervous breakdown. I know my dad has many a times been like, you're on the verge of a nervous breakdown.
Yeah, I think it just depends. Like, you know, there's varieties of nervous. That's another excellent use of psychedelics is they force a nervous breakdown. They force a release of all this pent-up energy, and they let you kind of go crazy for temporarily instead of, you know, what so often happens to people where they go crazy because they've been repressing too much stuff for too long, and the whole thing just breaks down, and then they're just slobbering, weeping mess of like just like laying on their floor shitting on themselves and like convulsing in agony. The in the Zen monasteries, though, they force a nervous breakdown. When you join a Zen temple, the idea is you meditate, you know, day after day after day after day, staring at a wall, allowing your ego to break down, and you start going crazy. And then in the midst of this, you are called in to speak with the Zen master, the master of the temple, and that person starts asking you questions. And the questions, have you ever heard this stupid like question, what's the sound of one hand clapping? Have you ever heard that before?
No, I haven't.
Well, that's his koan.
I like the way you said it, though.
I'm sure that's how they say it, too. What's the sound of one hand clapping? So, that was racist. Is that racist that I did that? I'm sorry if I said that. Well, Zen masters are not always Asian or stereotypically Asian, so I shouldn't have said that. I apologize. Please forgive me. But what's the sound of one hand clapping is a koan that you would say to someone. When you hear it now, you're like, I don't know. It's stupid.
Yeah.
Dumb question.
Well, I mean, it's unstupid, but yeah, it's like a thing. I get it.
Yeah.
I get what it's trying to say.
It's a question with no real answer.
Mm-hmm.
So after you've been meditating for a long time and you get this question, the idea is if you've really done it, I guess, the question acts as a kind of hammer that shatters your personality permanently. And then when your personality shatters and you give a real answer, for the first time in your life, you say something real, something comes out of you, something bubbles out of you that's real. And that's the moment of realization, and that's called Satori. And it comes from going insane. And the idea is like, you know, actualization doesn't come from living a normal, balanced, stable life. How are you having a normal, balanced, stable life when you don't even know what you're when you're a robot? You're not even having a life. You're just some, you know, automaton running by some mechanism if you haven't really thought this shit out. So then when the machine gets broken, the robot breaks down, you know, it's like in Star Trek or whatever. When the robot, that does not compute, 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 and the fucking smoke comes out and the thing breaks down.
Yeah.
That's the idea. You're smashing the fucking automaton. You know, they're the Zen masters are.
I've had people say to me that they think that, if I did shrooms, I would like figure everything out and be super successful.
I mean, you do know the studies that are coming back are showing that mushrooms like cause what appears to be permanent positive personality change in people who take them. Whoa. Under the right circumstances. They seem to cure depression. They say, check out the studies, look it up. I mean, these motherfuckers from the Reagan administration, these fucking anti-drug cocksuckers are just putting an anchor. They're just like putting a dog collar around the evolution of our species, these bastards, you know, and chaining us in the fucking backyard when all of a sudden somehow these universities are doing these studies. They're like, nope, sorry, you guys. All the babbling hippies at Burning Man who were talking about how these mushrooms are creating mystical experiences are right.
I just don't, like, if I were to get mushrooms, I'm like, where am I getting them from? I don't know. It just seems so, like, shady and, like, unsure. I'm, like, scared of it. I don't know. Maybe it's because I, like, don't know it, and that's kind of where my reasoning for not drinking comes from, is, like, my parents never drank, so I was never around it, so it never, like, seemed like the thing to do. But, I don't know. Like, if mushrooms were, like, I don't know. It's just, like, a new thing to me that I'm, like, where did that come from? I don't know. I'm scared.
Well, yeah, of course. Well, this is all makes sense. See, here's the thing. Here's the idea. If you don't want to think about your internal organs and you're afraid of thinking about your demise, or you're trying to, like, you know, stay on a surface level out of, like,
I'm not always trying to.
I know you're not. No, that's no. I actually no. You're being incredibly honest, and it just makes you seem really smart. And because, by the way, this is where so many people are all the time, and it's not necessarily a bad place, and it's certainly not a mark. Listen, you're fucking funny. You don't get to be funny from being an idiot. It comes from, you know, dumb, funny people are funny for the wrong reasons, you know? That's not, anyway, the whole point is, psychedelics will not allow you to exist at the surface level of reality. Mm-hmm. While you're on them, and then afterwards, it's very difficult to come back to that surface level because you've seen a deeper part of yourself. It's quite beautiful. You just don't want to be there anymore for the same reason. When you're a kid, I don't know, how old are little girls when they play with Barbie dolls?
Probably like four,
right?
And then, you know, for like the next 7 years.
For the next 7 years. So if I bring if I found a 7-year-old and I gave her a brand new Barbie doll, she'd probably get pretty excited, right?
Right.
If I find a 28-year-old and give them a Barbie doll, they're going to be like, what's wrong? What are you doing? I don't care about this. They're not going to get really excited about it. So in the same way, what begins to happen is that you can't be satisfied anymore with, like, living on the surface. It won't work. Yeah. You start getting tired of it. It gets bored. You start wanting to, you know, take your boat out into deeper waters. You know what I'm saying? And then that creates, but that should happen naturally. You don't want to force it. You don't want to, like, just, yeah, it's better to be, it's so much more interesting to be completely honest about where you're at than it is to pretend that you're somewhere else.
Yeah.
That's awful. It's so, I mean, if you, because by the way, where you're at's perfect.
I hope so. I don't know.
It is. No, it's perfect. I mean, think about it. If the whole universe is based on balance, and life on this planet is based on this incredible synchronicity, and we're all just part of this expression of infinity in the moment, then how can the expression of that infinity be wrong? And you're part of that expression, so that means you're perfect right now, no matter what you think or where you're
right.
at.
I think that I feel this way because I, like, when I was in high school, someone I knew died, and I went through this, like, 8-month period where I was, like, really obsessed with, like, just knowing that everyone was going to die, and, like, I was pretty depressed and, like, scared at night, and, like, went through, like, a, you know, like, a period of time where I was not that happy and, like I said, scared. And I just then, like, when I came out of it, I was like, oh my God, I never want to go through that again.
Right.
That was really bad. And so whenever it comes close to getting that way, I'm like, okay, no, I'm going to manufacture a way to just not think that way. And that's where I sort of came up with the, like, cut into my arm, and it's just a, you know, like a rubber.
So so cutting in your arm and thinking it's rubber, mm-hmm. started around the time when your friend died.
No, like, what, after I went through a long time of just feeling really uncomfortable.
How fucking crazy would it be if you cut into your arm and it really was rubber? You were right.
Well, how fucking crazy would it be if I really thought that and then did it and then just bled and died?
Both would be pretty, pretty fucking crazy, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, everyone's trying. You know, it's the using the rubber term is funny though. It's so, man, the mind's so smart because it's like the state of, like, unrealness. You know, like not being real, trying to. Oh, it's fucking Pinocchio. It's the Pinocchio myth. You've got to watch Pinocchio. There you go. The fucking little puppet who becomes real.
Yeah.
That's the idea. You're like, that's your archetype. Look it up. Check it out.
I've seen Pinocchio.
Yeah, that's the idea. It's like a little puppet who, like, but he wants to become real. Pinocchio wants to become a boy, right?
Yeah. That's all he wants.
But then it kind of sucks.
I can't remember. Something bad happens. Like, something sad happens. Or, like, doesn't somebody get eaten by a whale?
Yeah, it's insane. Yeah, it's like a really... It's like... all these things represent the same exact journey, which is going from the unreal to the real, from child phase to adult phase. And the... going through that period requires, like, loss and pain and suffering. So... all of these things have the exact same cyclical pattern. I'm reading Joseph Campbell, so I'm rambling about this shit way too much. How did your friend die?
When I was in high school, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, no, it was not a friend. It was a family member that had pancreatic cancer.
Wow.
And it wasn't even a close family member. It was my sister's... It's so weird. It was my sister's husband's... stepdad, but like they were all close and he was a great person, and then they just found out he had pancreatic cancer. And like, I'm sure you know, with pancreatic cancer, it's like, okay, in 6 months you go from great to gone,
right?
It's a really quick thing.
Yeah.
And it was just like, I've never... And then the aftermath of it, like, because his... that side of the family, they're from Alabama and like really Christians, like hearing the way they talked about it and like your soul serves God, it just made me so uncomfortable. And like, it just made me hate it all. And then, you know, when someone's telling you an opposite of what you believe, your belief becomes even stronger, because you're like, no way, let me think about this and explain it the way I feel. And so I was just thinking about where I came from with it, you know, like so often and just obsessively, like, no, he's gone. Like, he's... And again, like, I recently had someone who was actually close to me in my life die last month. And I felt like, oh, my God, it's coming back, this whole thing. And I'm like, no. So now I just don't even think about that, you know.
Right.
I, like, don't really acknowledge it. It's kind of weird.
You're running from it.
Yeah.
We're running from the shadow. You can't run from it. There's no escape.
No. Well, when he died, my friend Angelo, I, like, cried heavily and was very upset. I would say for, like, 10 days, I just, like, was...
Angelo Bowers?
Yeah.
Very sad.
Yeah.
Horrible, horrible, horrible tragedy.
The worst case scenario ever. Worst possible thing. And I was just devastated by it. And then I'm like, okay, well, now that I got that out of me, I'm just not... whenever I talk about it, I'm never gonna go there. I'm never gonna feel like the emotions of it.
For those of you who haven't heard about this terrible thing, there's a fucking super funny comic, Angelo Bowers, who was in a car, who was, I think, T-boned by a car in Hollywood and died. And he was a cancer survivor.
Yeah, he had found out he had cancer in like July, and then on Christmas he found like it was a clean bill of health. He got back to town, and then like 5 days after being back in LA and being so excited to start up again, he got hit by a drunk driver. Yeah.
Killed him.
Yeah. And really, just as hacky as it sounds for me to say this, just the best guy ever. It's, you know.
Yeah.
Really the best one.
Yeah, yeah. He's funny.
Yeah.
And it took... Yeah, it's... See, those moments are... That's truth. When those moments happen, that's a direct experience with truth. That's actually how things work. Everything really works like that, where for a second, you're only here for a second, and then you're gone.
Yeah.
That's the real mechanism of the universe. That's really how it happens. That's how intense the universe we're living in is. And so if you try to wrap yourself in some kind of philosophical electric blanket and pretend that you're like, you know, you're warm when you're really not, or try to like conceal yourself from this, then what ends up happening is you only experience one little piece of what's really happening. Because tragedies like that are so fucking breathtaking.
Yeah.
In their intensity, it's a truth that's how do you fucking... that event is so impossible to comprehend. It's so impossible to make sense of it, that... because it's bigger than you. It's a million times bigger than you. It's a million times bigger than all of us, you know. That's where you get like a real taste of how incredible the universe really is.
Yeah, and I know this sounds like so simple and basic of a thought, but like, that's it. Like, he's gone, and there's not... like, that's it. You don't get anything else. It's just over. That's what like my big thing that I got from it was like, there's no... you don't get like like a, you don't get to like say one thing right before they go. Like it's just done.
Gone.
Yeah, you don't get anything.
Quick.
You don't get anything.
Happens quick, and we're all headed there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're all headed there. We're all gonna blink out like that. We're all headed to that place of, it's a singularity. It's a that's what, you know what a singularity is. You
no.
know the term. So a singularity is a like the point in a black hole after the event horizon when. You can't see anymore because no light can come out. There's no light. It's like light just gets, so there's nothing there. No, there's, we don't know what it is. It's called a singularity.
Mm-hmm.
That's what death is. Death isn't a personal singularity where you're gone,
mm-hmm.
gone forever, gone. Permanently gone. Nothing you more. Now, here's the thing. What dies? You know, that's the real question. What dies? Your physical body fucking dies, for sure. Your physical body dies. And if that's all you are, if you're just some hard neurological hard drive or some biological hard drive, then that's it. The hard drive crashes. You're gone. All your memories are gone. Everything's
yeah.
gone. And that's true. That part of yourself is gone. But there's a, you know, my opinion is that what you truly are is not... You're not the circuitry. You're the thing that's making the circuitry run. You're the thing that's animating that circuitry, which I think is a infinite field of awareness that manifests in the form of people from time to time. So that thing's still there. So that means that Angelo is still around. That means that Angelo's body ceased to exist. His circuitry isn't working anymore, but the thing that he truly was, like the essence of who he is, now he's just become everything. Have you ever been around someone dying?
No.
In the moment of, man, you gotta do it. It's awesome. Go find a dying person and sit with him. But if you've ever been around someone who's dying, it's the opposite of what you think it is. So there's so much life coming out of them at the moment of death that you begin to realize that they're just what they really are, just been kind of trapped in this human form and kind of reduced to this silly like little point, a node of, you know, identity in the matrix of infinity. But when that fucking thing goes, it's not like you're gone for, I don't think you're gone forever. I think you just become a million times more amazing than you are now because you're not stuck in this stupid fucking, look at these stupid bodies we're in. We're stuck in these fucking things. You think you're a doll. I'm covered in hair. It's embarrassing. Yeah. Fuck. This sucks.
I can't buy into what you're saying though, because when you say this like essence and all that stuff, that's what you really are. I'm like, no, that's just your brain that puts together what's going on. But I will say this, like after Angelo died, in like my circle of comedians, like we all have really kind of changed and like taken a lot from it. But is that what he is now? Like, that's crazy.
That's part of what he is. You know what that is? That's like when he died, it was like an atomic explosion. When he died, it was an atomic explosion of truth where the essential nature of him and all his potential and everything that he would have been got in that moment blasted out into the ether, and it went through all of you and it changed you a little bit because he was that potent and meant that much to you. It redefined your life forever, permanently.
Yeah, that's true, but he doesn't fucking know that, you know?
Well, Angelo, I mean, the part of Angelo that was like, I suppose, like that. Yeah, I don't know that he knows that. I mean, this fucking, the hard drive crashed. It's that part of himself is gone. But I think that the essence of what he is, it doesn't go away. I mean, especially if you look at it from the point of view of eternity and the idea that our perception of time is just based on the biocomputer, you know, we think there's a past, present, and future only because we are experiencing time right now. But the moment you die, you're outside of time permanently, which means that the time that Angelo was alive is infinitely repeating, you know, it's always glowing in time and space. I mean, we think when the past is gone, it's gone. When the future doesn't exist, but from a scale like an infinite time frame, it's all happening at once. It's all this explosion of happening that our perceptual mechanisms limit us to the present moment. But if once those things are shut down, you become everything. Who knows? Who knows? But the whole point is you can't really get rid of it. I mean, the past is infinitely happening. It's there. We just can't see.
Time continuum.
Yeah, man. It's all part of
Back to the Future.
There you go. It's all part of this like infinite loop that's happening, and that's why that's why the conceptualization of life as being completely gone at the moment of death is kind of like hanging up the phone on somebody when you don't need to. You know, you're kind of like, you're just making it so that you can't access who they were and who they are now anymore. And so now you're kind of like, you don't need to do that. You don't have to close yourself off to that. You know, you can open yourself up to that personality, where they exist in the past. You can, like, yeah. It's the idea that, and certainly where they exist in your memory.
Yeah.
If you don't want to take it to like a super metaphysical level, but I would say that you can like connect with, you know, the essence of what a person is after they die. And this is why in like different, you know, some religions we pray to the ancestors, and we, you know, always think about them. You know, when I chant Nam Myoho Renge Kyo, which is a form of Buddhism that I practice, at the end of that, you, one of the prayers that you do is you ring a bell for everyone who is in your life who's died, and you think about them as you ring the bell. And I think this is the most beautiful thing, because it keeps them alive, it keeps them here somehow
for you.
Yeah And it's a way of respecting them. It's not a form of fucking, and it's not sentimental either. It's just like we're clearly remembering, you know, the sweetest moment you had with them, and it just reminds you of how great they are. But I think there's other, I mean, I really do. I know that people who have passed away, like right after my grandmother died, I had the coolest fucking dream where, because she had this back porch she would sit on and watch the birds. And I was sitting with her on this back porch, and she was like, she didn't really say anything, but what she was like conveying to me was, look at that. And I looked up, and it was just this like, it wasn't the sky, it wasn't like the marsh in Georgia that she lived next to. It was this, the most incredible series of patterns. It was this beautiful undulating series of patterns that were back. Well, my grandmother, I don't know, some mystical thing happened in the midst of that story, and the memory card filled up.
And the moral of that, or whatever that we took from it, was it gets better, right?
It gets fucking better.
Yeah.
No matter what you are, or who you are, or where you are.
I have a grandma dream story. My dad's parents, I never met because my dad had me really late and they died before I was born. They both lived in my house. So like, I feel like this connection to them, and my other grandparents like kind of hate me. So like, I have these like idolized view of them. I once had this dream that I found out my grandma, who had died, was dead, and she was dead but still living, and she was living underground in my backyard, and it was like really cool.
Wow.
She was just in this little underground cave in my backyard, and there was a candle lit, and then she was like, come on in, and it was really nice.
It wasn't scary?
No, it was really nice. I think that's why I'm not scared of ghosts or dead people, because the only association I have with ghosts or dead people are my grandparents, and I just feel like they love me and are just looking out for me.
Man, that would be so fucking weird if you found out your grandmother hadn't died and just was living in this cave.
Yeah, it was cool. It was exciting.
Subterranean, the underworld, Hades, the idea that's the underworld. You know the idea of Hades? That's the idea. Like, the Orpheus, you know, the land of the dead. They were underground in Greek myth. You would live underground. That's where you went, is underground. That's a strange thing. Death is associated. Well, I guess it's because you bury people.
Right.
That's what it is. And so, but yeah, you become part of the earth. You become part of the earth and flowers grow.
That's freaky.
That is freaky, isn't it? When you realize the topsoil is death. Like all the thing that's like growing, all the food that we eat.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's like death. It's decay. It's growing out of decay. And then when you realize that all our fuel, the stuff that fuels our cars, is just dead dinosaurs, dead vegetation. And then you realize like all of society runs and feeds off of death, the infinite cycle. That's the cycle. You guys can't see it. When sometimes she makes this awesome, horrified facial expression that's really cool. You know what? it's awful, but that's the thing that's so tough to accept, is the brutality of it, how all this stuff depends on things dying.
Yeah, I just hate, I'm so sensitive that I hate the idea of someone else suffering or hurting or like for our benefit. So like to hear that's, I think like that's why this, the fat rabbits that get eaten,
yes,
it's like never gonna leave me, this like vision I have of these cute little rabbits eating and being happy and then they have to die. It's really, I don't like that.
You gotta read Watership Down. You're gonna have to read the whole book now to cleanse yourself of this. You'll love it.
Yeah, I know.
You've gotta read it. The fat rabbits have to, you know what, by the way, the fat rabbits could have left anytime they wanted. That was the important part of that story.
They're hypnotized.
They didn't have to stay there. Those fat fucking lazy ass rabbits could have climbed right out of that hole and followed to paradise. See, that's the problem, man. We got all these fucking fat rabbits.
Yeah.
Living in their houses, living in their fucking trailers, living in their little pods of delusion, you know, humping and humping and making fat little babies and sending the babies off to get their heads blown off in Afghanistan. It's like, come on, man, we don't have to do this anymore. You don't have to be a fat rabbit anymore. You could be a thin, lean rabbit running through the fields completely free, and sure, a hawk might swoop down and eat you, but at least for a little while you got to experience happiness. There's actually this great book called The Painted Bird. Have you ever read that book, The Painted Bird? Man, it's really intense, because there's you should not read this book, actually. That this book would be the end of you. It would send you over the fucking cliff.
Why?
Because it's the most incredible. It's like this book about, it's during, I believe it's set in World War II. And this kid gets left behind by his fleeing parents and has to like go through the different villages of the, I think it's in Germany, and it's in the deep backwoods of Germany with all these superstitious villagers, and it's basically this child kind of like finding safety in the form of like superstitious, backwards, vicious villagers who think the child has some kind of magical powers. I can't remember why. I can't remember if it was the kid's ethnicity or the kid had certain colored eyes or something, but somehow they thought the kid was magical. But basically it's just brutal. It's the only, spoiler alert. Mm-hmm. It's the most, if you're planning on reading the book, because it's a great book, it doesn't matter, it doesn't ruin it. One of the scenes, this crazy woman who lived in the forest, who'd kind of made friends with this kid, was a whore. And she'd been fucking a lot of like the villagers' husbands and stuff. So the kid watches as the women of the village like grab her. And I believe they put a bottle into her pussy and stomp on it so it breaks inside of her vagina. Yeah, it's awful. And that's just one little like horrific scene that in this kid's journey, to freedom. One of the horrible things he sees. But another great scene in this book is there's a fat rabbit living in a hutch that they, you know, they're fattening up to eat. Mm. And the kid opens up the hutch and pulls the rabbit out and brings him out into the forest to go free. And the fat rabbit kind of like ambles towards the forest for a second, looks around, slow, dim-witted, and then turns around and goes back into its cage, kind of like,
wow.
I'm not going to be free. I'm going to live in delusion. I'm going to stay in this whatever, you know, safe environment for the sake of, for comfort.
Yeah.
The rabbit picked comfort over freedom.
Right. I wonder if that's how my dog is, because we had one dog that would always try to run away, and now we have this fat dog that like won't run away and is scared of going for walks.
The dog's scared of going for walks.
Yeah, he doesn't like to leave the house. He just wants to stay inside.
Oh yeah, you know, sounds like a good dog. It's so funny that when good dogs, when we think of a dog as a good dog, it really just means
like sad, and
it's not in nature that would not be a good dog. In like the wild, that would be a bad dog.
Yeah.
In the wild, bad dogs are good and good dogs are bad. You know, in the wild, a fucking tame domesticated dog that thinks a bowl of food's gonna get pushed in front of it every day, dead instantly, right. Dead. But it, you know,
skills.
No skills, man. No fucking skills. That's a problem. We got all these fucking good dogs out there.
Yeah, I like the good dogs.
We need bad dogs. Dogs of freedom. We got to be free, you know, if you can. But who knows what that even means? What is it? What is it? Was it Desperado? The song Desperado? Freedom? That's just some people talking. Yeah, you know that line?
I don't know that song. I just know it's referenced.
You don't know Desperado?
I know that it's referenced in a Seinfeld episode, though. Really bad with the references.
Well, it's a great fucking song. Oh, man. Look, we got to wrap this thing up. Thank you so much for being my first guest.
Thank you.
It's been such a blast.
I feel so honored.
I feel honored. Thank you for coming into this Foff Palace.
I like being on the floor. This is like so comfortable and childish for me.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I feel like I need a desk or a table for I'm going to get a table for this thing. Do you have any shows coming up?
Nothing I need to plug, but thank you.
What's your Twitter?
It's at little with an underscore Esther.
And what's your website?
LittleEsther.com, I guess.
LittleEsther.com. Follow her on Twitter. Go to her website. Listen to her pod. You have a podcast.
Yeah, I kind of do.
Listen to her podcast.
Yeah, I have a podcast with Brody Stevens and Brian Redband on the Death Squad Network, but I'm going to start my own one soon.
And she's going solo on the Go Deeper section or whatever the new, I don't even know what the website this thing is going to turn into. Stee has kindly volunteered to help me, Stee is coming with me into the chaos and into the world of magic that exists when you leave the known into the unknown. Hopefully, Stee will continue down this weird path. That's our web designer, Stee.
Oh, cool.
And so I don't know where this is going to be, but hopefully there's going to be a Go Deeper section. And just because I'm starting a new podcast doesn't mean that you can't still listen to the back episodes of The Lavender Hour if you want to feel sentimental or go back in time and listen and see if you can find where things went wrong with us in one of the episodes. Maybe it's in there. Maybe you can track it down. But you can go there and buy a bonus episode of that. And you know what? There's going to be fucking bonus episodes of this thing, and it's going to be the same thing. I mean, Jesus Christ, what do you guys want? It's just a name. The name changed. Does that mean that the essence of what this thing is changed just because the name's gone? Because the exterior form of the Lavender Hour is gone into the infinite nothingness? Does the Lavender Hour remain? Is it still here with us in this new podcast, the Duncan Trussell Family Hour? You decide for yourselves. And if you think it is, send a fucking donation. I need it now. I'm in a fucking Foff Palace in Atwater. I need some furniture. I need some shit, man. And follow me on Twitter. Oh, fuck. Why am I saying this? You guys know me. I love you. And we'll see you next week. It's going to be much easier to do weekly episodes of this because I'm doing it solo. So I'll see you guys next week. And go to the Go Deeper section. Leave comments. Let me know what you think about this and what you think about the name, the Duncan Trussell Family Hour, and whatever else you guys think. Good night. Hare Krishna. Get some wet pussies going out there and fuck a lot. I love you. Goodbye.
Matt is the captain of Alpha Centauri. We must be out of our minds. Though we are shipmates and bound for tomorrow, everyone here's flying blind. But we must believe in magic. We must believe in the guiding hand. 'Cause if you believe in magic, you have the universe at your command. Matt is a crew bound for Alpha Centauri. dreamers and poets and clowns. But bold is the ship bound for Alpha Centauri, and nothing can turn it around. But we must believe in magic. We must believe in the guiding hand. 'Cause if you believe in magic, you have the universe at your command. We must believe in magic. We must believe in the guiding hand. 'Cause if you believe in magic, you have the universe at your command. We must believe in magic. We must believe in the guiding hand. 'Cause if you believe in